And thanks, everybody, for joining us today for this episode of Positive Outcomes. This is a podcast for the P&O community. And again, I thank you for joining us. My name is Jeff Newell. I'm your host today for this episode. We have a great show lined up today. We have Eric Carlson is with me, as well as Blair Locke from COAP. We're going to be discussing pattern recognition, how it fits into the present and the future of prosthetics, with a history of it, where it's come from, where it's going. So we're going to discuss all that. So it's going to be a very interesting show. Blair is the CEO and co-founder of COAP with extensive background in electrical engineering. And one of the things that's kind of neat about Blair, among many things, is that he graduated from UNB here in Canada. So that's just a nice added fun fact. And Erica, she has 15 years of experience in the medical industry. 10 of them have involved in prosthetics, and she is currently the director of sales at COAP. So thanks very much, Blair and Erica, for joining us. I'm glad you could put aside the time to be with us. I'm just looking at pattern recognition. To me, when I first was introduced to pattern recognition and saw how it worked and saw what it could do for the patients, you know, it really blew me away. To me, it's a real game changer in the myoelectrics world as compared to what we've had for the past, since I started in the field. And, you know, I just see it's going in such a fast and direction that I'm anxious to see what it has in the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Anyways, before we go ahead, Blair.
No, I'm glad you're excited, Jeff. And just a note, thanks for having us. This is really exciting. And I'll point out, not only did I graduate from UNB, that sounds like I might have came in. I'm actually Canadian, so that's exciting for me to be on the podcast. Yeah. Born and raised in the East Coast, so I've been here in the U.S. for the last 15 or 16 years or so. So great. I'm really happy that we're getting this chance to chat with you today.
Yeah, great. So before we get into the present and the future of what pattern recognition holds, can you guys just share a little bit of the history of where it's come from, where it all started?
Yeah, I can give you our perspective on that. And there is a little significant amount of history, even though in the commercial marketplace of P&O, the introduction of pattern recognition is something that's available. It's been relatively new. So COAP came to market here in the U.S. with a pattern recognition product in late 2013. But the history goes back a lot further than that. And so, some people are aware of this and some people are not. And Jeff, what you expressed about it being exciting and kind of mind-blowing when you see it, people have been anticipating and seeing that for a long time. So in one lineage of the story, you can date the foundation of this back into the 1960s. And there was research in a few areas around the world. And one of those was in the U.S. and another in Canada that eventually combined, where researchers and scientists and engineers understood that muscle contractions of the body created electrical signals, and not just any electrical signals, but information contained in electrical signals. And it wasn't that long before this was thought of as a good way to control a power prosthetic device, so a power actuated prosthetic device, and not necessarily in the conventional single site electrode or dual site electrode style that we've seen conventionally. But pattern recognition was a way researchers and scientists said, hey, if we record information from the muscles from a large area of the residual limb, we can decode this information and therefore provide intuitive control. Now, in the 1960s and 1970s, the mathematical theories were being developed. And the scientists would do a lot of this work on paper, and that eventually turned into clinical or in-lab experiments. But the mathematical algorithms required to do this took a lot of computational power. And so the research continued along for decades and was always a big interest to many different parties, but it couldn't really become a reality until embedded wearable hardware, the electronics, could handle the algorithms on a power efficient and small manner. So really you get into the 2000s where we start to see that become a reality. Now, by that time, the conventional methods of myoelectric control had effectively taken a stronghold and is really what we see and most of the field sees and understands as myoelectric control is what we will call today a single or dual site style of myoelectric control. So the research for the decades continued along, and one of the groups that really advanced the field significantly is the group at UNB, which is where I got my start. And a great institution there, the Institute of Biomedical Engineering, continued to develop different aspects of the mathematical algorithms through the years. In the early to mid-2000s, these algorithms started to be put together into what was the first semblance of a complete system. So front to back, you know, electrodes on the skin, controlling a pattern, a powered prosthetic device. And that was kicked along even further, but why I would call kind of a catalyzing event around 2005. And in 2005, we start to see the research and work of Dr. Todd Kuiken in the TMR realm. So TMR is targeted muscle reinnervation. Targeted muscle reinnervation is a surgical technique designed to help those with amputation where they get rewired. So the nerves of their body get rewired to available musculature. What that does is better access to the neurological information that the amputee has to the outside world. And in order to show and prove the benefit of that surgical technique, they really needed a good control mechanism. So what are you going to do with all that information that the body can now make? Well, pattern recognition was a great candidate in its maturity at the time. The two worlds collided. I got involved in some of that great research and a lot of fun for about a decade. And what happened there, pattern recognition was a great way to expose the power and benefit of TMR and vice versa. So, you know, fast forward a few years from that, we were performing clinical trials in a research setting with individuals who've had TMR and who were expressing things like, this pattern recognition control is great. How do I get this once the study is complete? You know, where can I buy this? How come this isn't in the arm? So Jeff, again, like you saw, it's a very powerful, impactful thing. So one thing led to another. It really motivated us to look at and seriously consider taking this technology, finally, after these decades of research, to the market. And that's what we did. And like I say, we hit the market in 2013.
Okay, great. You kind of jumped right into my first question for you. So that's great. You know, this system is, as you just shared with us, is a very sophisticated system. You know, but yet when you see it operating, it seems very simplistic. And sometimes, you know, when I've displayed it and done patient trials, people are floored that, well, how come it can do so much, but yet it seems so easy? Do you want to just touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, and that's by design. I mean, it feels in some sense you could use the word hidden in a good way. You know, a lot of that comes and parallels the world around us. You know, in this time of technology, there is a lot of significant technological advancement that has been done in a great user interface or user experience way. If you think, stop for a moment and think about how sophisticated our, you know, mobile phones are, or our vehicles, or our computers, or smart home technology. Boy, technology has become incredibly sophisticated, yet there's been a really good focus in the past decade or maybe a little bit more on making it very user-friendly, in a way to say that, or a way that says, look, the benefit of the technology should be left at the function and the simplicity, not to involve the end user in, you know, the nuances of the tech. So we followed that course and really wanted to focus and not lose our focus on the function. When the research started in this area, and what we saw as a clear benefit is that you can achieve incredible prosthetic function. The users can get great intuitive control and mastery of the prosthetic arm or hand in using this technology. Now, that as the focus means we don't really need to burden the user with a lot of unnecessarily technological details. So we put it in a nice black box, and you don't have to worry about it, kind of like our phone. We don't really think about how it works. We just enjoy the benefits of that. So there's a lot that goes into it, definitely. You know, if you think back to all of the studies and the research, the academic foundations, those really do and did prove that sophisticated side. You can go to the academic journals and see the mathematical algorithms, and you can see how the development's changed over the years. But really what moved it for us is spending the time and doing a lot of observation and really watching and listening to how people use this and how they benefited from it. And to see firsthand, you know, the clinical problems that it helped to overcome or help to solve, you know, non-intuitive control of conventional systems, difficult clinical setup, lack of flexibility over kind of these incumbent technologies. So as we saw these, we saw the way that a simplistic approach with pattern recognition helps overcome that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. You know, I can remember back in my earlier days, in my earlier life, we did a lot of myoelectrics, and a lot of those devices just ended up in the closet. And the reason being was just exactly what you said. You know, they were heavy devices. They were difficult for the patient to utilize. They were difficult for the patient to work with. And it came down to the point where the patient just said, you know what, I can get along without it. And, you know, since pattern recognition is coming into view here, I've noticed just a huge change in that, you know, patients are utilizing their prosthetic side now so much more because it's so intuitive. It's just, and that's really exciting to me to see that. You know, we can sit here and talk about pattern recognition and co-op for hours, but until you put it on a patient and see what they can do in a matter of minutes, it's mind-boggling. It is. And it's hard to say and explain. You know, I don't want to sound salesy because, you know me, I'm not a salesman. I'm a technical guy. But when you see it functioning, it's just, you know, it just floors me. You know, I get goosebumps. I've done probably now, I'm probably up to about 70 patient fittings, and I still get goosebumps when I see them work it. It's like a brand new story every single time.
Yeah. And I think what's exciting about that is that exact thing fuels us. And I've been seeing that now. Oh boy, I don't want to say how long, where, you know, the eyes light up, and it's not just the person using the device. It's everybody that's been involved in their care and knows how challenging and what some of the limitations of the older style can be. And really what a lot of this technology does is it gives the user an opportunity for personalization of that control. And that's not really been an option before. If you think of a conventional two-site system, you work, you know, technically, technologically, we're trained, right, clinically to set that up for an individual. So there's the process by which you have to adjust some threshold settings and some gain settings and get the electrodes in the exact right position. And then you say, there, let's learn how to use it in that exact setup. Now, pattern recognition kind of flips that on its head and says, hey, let the individual teach the machine how they naturally want to use it, not the opposite. So we're not setting up, you know, the machine and saying, hey, you have to work within these constraints. You're saying, you, human, tell the machine how you want to control this. And that's what makes it feel and look really magic. We get those reactions quite a bit, which is exciting.
To add to that, Blair.
Well, now the patient is.
I was just going to say, to add to that, Blair, just from the standpoint of the patient, I think what's interesting is, you know, Jeff, you said that this is a game changer. And patients often seem unimpressed because they think that this is how their arm should work. And for those of us who have fit standard myoelectrics, we see the difference right away. And so there's almost more wow from within the profession than there is directly from the patient.
Yeah, that's a funny one. I am smiling because that's so true, especially when we see a new user who's not ever really worn a dual site system. You know, everybody around them can be quite excited, you know, oh my goodness, it's amazing. And the user's sort of, yeah, isn't this what everybody experiences? You know, isn't this how easy it should be? You're like, well, yeah, it is how easy it should be. But, you know, decades of people that have come before you who didn't experience it like this. So that's always a fun one.
Yeah. And just to give an example, I had a patient that I saw. He was a real rough, tough guy. He was a member of a motorcycle gang. He lost his arm above the elbow through a motorcycle accident, and he wanted to get back to normal. And, you know, that's something that's pretty common with patients, not realizing what the road ahead is for them. And they tried to do a standard conventional myo system with him, and he was getting very, very frustrated. They could find one site, electrode site with a very small EMG signal. And so the prosthetist called him and said, hey, Jeff, do you think we could try co-op here with them? You know, and he explained the situation. And I was a little skeptical, to be honest, you know, but we went in. And the first day we hooked him up, and we were able to get him to flex and extend his elbow on the tester, which was just amazing. And it was, you know, he couldn't believe it because he knew what he'd gone through trying to get just a single site. And by the time we left, there was tears coming down this guy's eyes, you know, and it just was so amazing to see that. You know, he's a rough guy with tattoos all over him. And that's how he felt. It was, you know, the next time I went in, we were able to get him to open and close his hand, you know, so you know, he's well on his way. So, you know, as I said, you need to see these to really get a full understanding of what this system can do.
Yeah. The word skepticism is interesting and common. We, you know, we see that a lot. And that story is not that different from many we have. And one of our staff, one of our team members is a prosthesis user. And she was introduced to us in the same way. We happened to be at a P&O conference, and she walked by our, you know, exhibit hall booth and just at a downtime. And you know, we said, oh, you know, you want to try this? Oh, no, you know, kind of no thanks. I've tried Mayo before. It doesn't really work for me. But she ended up giving us a whirl. And, you know, 2 minutes later, she was hooked. And we've heard that type of story all the time as well, where somebody might have abandoned a conventional device years before and then in turn tried this and really couldn't believe it for themselves. So skeptical we're used to. Erica deals with that every day.
Okay, so what's the most important things do you think to consider when applying pattern recognition to a patient's prosthesis for a patient?
Yeah, I'll jump in here. I think that the biggest takeaway and most important thing when you even think about applying pattern recognition is that you don't really overthink the electrode placement. It's really just most important to have consistent contact of those electrodes and making sure that you're covering the surface area of somebody's residual limb. So I often leave an appointment with the takeaway of coverage plus contact equals control. And if that's something that somebody is keeping in mind as they're evaluating a patient, they're likely to have really great outcomes with pattern rec.
Yeah. Not to sound like a broken record, Eric, that is another element of this whole system, you know, because you go in, you wanted to talk about it with the process, and they're expecting quite an ordeal in getting those electrode sites. You know, they've worked with myo testers and seen how much time, you know it as well as I know how much time is done trying to find those two exact sites. And then you transfer those sites to a check socket, and then they move slightly. But when you're using the electrodes with the system, it's so easy to find your spots, and you get great success so quickly and easily. So it's a real added benefit for the prosthetist.
Yeah, I mean, there's times that we've gone with the test socket, the patient wasn't even on site yet. We go ahead and just based on knowing general anatomy and what side the limb is, go ahead and drill the holes ahead of time, get them set up. And 9 times out of 10, you don't have to move any of those electrodes.
Yeah. It all relates to kind of how it works. So fundamentally, it's different. Yet, we certainly understand if you are a clinician and you've experienced and you know how difficult and the challenge of finding and locating one electrode site or two electrode sites. And now knowing that the COAPT system in its current form has the equivalent of 8 electrodes, it's easy to understand why the mind jumps to say, oh my goodness, it was hard to find 1 or 2. How am I going to locate 8? And it feels burdensome. Now, the important takeaway is that the importance of placement is very different. The electrodes are not targeting a signal. It's more like a microphone in a large room just picking up ambient patterns. So the electrodes work together, you know, in a concert to gather that. So as long as they make contact, like Erica said, and there's coverage, some kind of spread, we say, hey, spread the electrodes out. Cover the limb where you can be sure that those electrodes are going to make contact. And then we'll let the individual teach the system because it will figure it out. So it seems ominous by a sheer number standpoint, but the approach, once understood, is easy. You know, and to your question here, kind of important things to consider, I'll note a few things we encounter. There are a number of groups and clinics and folks out there that have a preconceived, I think, notion of what pattern recognition is, and others that don't, or maybe have an incorrect perception. And what it's not, it's important to talk about what it's not. Pattern recognition isn't something that reads the mind. We get that all the time. You know, oh, is this mind reading? No, EMG is still the input necessary to make this work. So it's not reading mind, but what it's doing, it's reading EMG signals that are intuitive. So to make a prosthetic hand open and close, we're not instructing the individual to envision, you know, a wrist extension or a wrist flexion feeling. We're just saying, hey, open what your phantom hand would be or close it. And wrist rotations, we're not asking for anything other than we'll imagine doing what your pronation and supination would be. When it comes to multifunction hands, it can be the same thing. Well, what does a point feel like? Do that. Let the system pick it up. So not mind reading, but it does. It's a very intuitive method of style of control. We touched on it being personalized, and that's the other important takeaway. And other things we have heard in the past, what it kind of gets confused with, people will say, should I consider pattern recognition from COAPT for my patient, or should they have TMR surgery, or should they have osseointegration surgery? And it's important to note, those are vastly different things. TMR, again, is a surgical enhancement to get more information from the body in a convenient way. Osseointegration is an attachment mechanism, and pattern recognition is a type of control. All three, for example, work really well together, or any subset they're in, and they're not synonymous. So pattern recognition and TMR are not the same thing, nor do you need TMR for pattern recognition. We get that a lot as well. So, I considered pattern recognition for my patient, but don't they have to have that TMR surgery? No, they don't. They do work well together, but it's not necessary in every case.
Well, my next question, I don't know how much you can answer without spilling beans. So if you can't answer too much, I'll understand. But I'm asking here, where do you see in the future with pattern recognition? What new things are you researching now? What do you think is going to come out in the near future?
Yeah, well, you're right. I can't really talk about everything, but I'll say that we have a significant team these days, and a lot of them are dedicated to some pretty exciting next level, next generation stuff. The common theme really, again, goes back to function and simplicity. I do think where we're headed, these devices in this control style will continue to get better and better for that personalization of the user, empower the user, and get towards a lifestyle with the control of their prosthesis. You know, some things we can note and talk about, there are areas of research that are well known and we're tapping into. You're going to see things like implantable sensors. So because skin contact is a challenge, implantable sensors, as those come online for some people, are going to be a great option. That also opens the door to use new and better and broader mathematical algorithms, simply because the EMG information you get from inside the skin or under the skin surface is much better than the information we get from the skin surface. So that's going to open the door for better control algorithms. You're going to see, and we're already starting to see this a little bit, what we'll call sensor fusion. So EMG sensors are just one way to get information from the body. You know, there's all kinds. You don't have to look too far to see ultrasonic sensors, your position sensors, pressure sensors, temperature sensors, lots of different ways to achieve control. And really the power in a lot of that is where they're going to come together. Letting the systems and the algorithms get smarter by themselves, or what we would call automatic adaptation, is going to be something. The way of the world now with Internet of Things and connectivity, you're going to see quote unquote big data and more machine learning come into play. So can't get into too many details, but these are just a few of the things that we work on. Now we're really excited. Our excitement kind of outpaces what we're able to successfully bring to market. We have to kind of release in bite-sized chunks, if you will. But, in the future, that could change. And I think we'll see some wholesale differences.
Okay. So, guys, one of the last things I want to ask you, some of the obstacles you find or hurdles that you find that impede the advancement of pattern recognition.
That's a good one. Erica, do you want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, I think some of the obstacles that prohibit advancement, I mean, I think a lot of that's going to rely on the R&D team. I think one big challenge, you know, is in the US, and elsewhere, is insurance coverage, getting over the hump of letting these companies know that, you know, this is something that is working for these patients. And, you know, Jeff, as you mentioned earlier, you know, you had seen a history of arms ending up in a closet, proving to these companies that this is going to change the way somebody controls their arm. And this is going to get them to use the arm instead of, you know, ending up unused.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And with that, we'd like to thank you very much for tuning in today and listening to this episode. I'd like to thank Erica and Blair from Co-op for stopping by and talking to us. It was very, very interesting. And I'm sure you guys would attest to that. Of course, if you have a show or a topic for future episodes, you can email us at positiveoutcomes@ortoped.ca. New episodes are released every other Thursday at positiveoutcomes.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive Outcomes is a production of Ortoped ULC in conjunction with our partners, produced by Jonathan Stone and Patrick Sauvé, and hosted by me, Jeff Newell, and Simon Beals. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, take care.